Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson, and produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I am Jeff White. This is edition NWS 801 for release on Sunday, June 30th, 2024. On WaveScan today, Radio Luxembourg, The Early History, Part 1, Emergency Shortwave Receivers, and our DX report from India. You probably know that in the late 1960s and 1970s, Radio Luxembourg was a powerhouse top 40 station in Europe with transmitters on long wave, medium wave, short wave, and FM. Their medium wave transmitter on 1439 kilohertz, or 208 meters, was rated at 1.2 megawatts, and in its heyday, it was by far the most successful station beaming programming in English to the British Isles, with a format and jingle package very similar to that of WABC in New York. However, the station had a very colorful history, going right back to the early 1930s, and Ray Robinson has been digging into the pre-World War II events that led to the creation of the station in the first place. Here's Ray.
Thanks, Jeff. Luxembourg is a small triangular-shaped country in north-central Europe with a land area just under 1,000 square miles, about two-thirds the size of the US state of Rhode Island. It's squeezed between Germany in the east and Belgium in the west, and shares a short border with France in the south. Luxembourg is one of the least densely populated countries in Europe, with a total population of around 670,000. Its government is a representative democracy headed by a constitutional monarch, Grand Duke Henri, making it the world's only remaining sovereign Grand Duchy. The city of Luxembourg lies about 117 miles from Brussels, 119 miles from Frankfurt, 230 miles from Paris, and just 300 miles from London. I was recently researching in some British newspapers of the 1930s for other purposes, and I came across a number of articles and programme listings for Radio Luxembourg that tell a story that I think's not well understood or documented elsewhere. So, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to take a look at that very interesting formative period in European broadcasting. For our purposes, the general setting starts with the fact that the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, had been given its Royal Charter in 1927, with Scotsman Sir John Reith appointed as Director General. A staunch Presbyterian, Reith's philosophy of broadcasting was that the purpose of the BBC was to inform, educate and entertain, in that order. He greatly resisted American-style programming, where the goal was to attract the largest audiences and thereby the greatest advertising revenue. There was no advertising on the BBC, as indeed there still isn't to this day, and most musical programming was classical in nature. At a time when American, Canadian and Australian stations were drawing huge audiences with the broadcast of baseball, hockey and rugby games, the BBC carried little sports programming, not wanting to spend its limited airtime on football or cricket matches, regardless of how popular they may be. On Sundays, there was no broadcasting at all before 12:30 p.m, so that people had time to attend church, and for the rest of the day, Sunday programming was always very sombre and serious. In the late 1920s, a number of privately owned stations in France took advantage of this to broadcast programming of a more popular nature, dance band music, show tunes and the like, across the channel to the British Isles. These included Poste Parisienne, Radio Lyon, Radio Toulouse, Radio Paris, Radio Eiffel Tower, Radio Normandy and others. But these were not high-powered stations and could typically only reach the south of England by groundwave at night and the north of England by skywave. The Midlands generally didn't receive any signals at all from the continental stations, and of course nothing could be heard from them anywhere at all in the British Isles during the daytime. To exploit this opportunity at a whole new level, a new company was set up in Luxembourg in 1930, called Compagnie Luxembourgeoisie de Radiodiffusion, CLR, with a franchise from the Luxembourg government to create a new radio station of not less than 100 kilowatts, with advertising allowed to be carried, as well as foreign language broadcasts. To coordinate frequency allocations in the countries of Europe, a convention had been held in Prague in 1929. The government of Luxembourg hadn't attended, but in their absence they'd been allocated the medium wave channel of 1346 kHz, or 223 metres. This, the convention deemed, was adequate to cover the small country. However, the new company, CLR, had ambitions for coverage much greater than just the country of Luxembourg itself, and had set about constructing a high-powered long-wave station. They had succeeded in raising capital of 5 million French francs, mainly from investors in France who could see the commercial possibilities for broadcasting to the British Isles. CLR bought a large area of land on the Junglinster Plateau, about 10 miles northeast of Luxembourg City, and there set about constructing its first transmitter site. Studios were also built in the city itself. Set-up and construction took a couple of years, but finally, on Sunday, March the 19th, 1933, the new station was heard. In the UK the next day, the Nottingham Evening Post reported, quote, "The new giant transmitter, Radio Luxembourg, blossomed out into the open with a vengeance last evening and is on a par with Radio Paris as regards strength and quality," unquote. At 7:35 p.m. they announced they were using a wavelength of 1191 metres, 252 kHz, with 200 kilowatts, the power being generated by two 800 horsepower diesel engines. They remained in test mode for several months, carrying no advertising, and identifying the station as Radio Luxembourg Experimental. Programmes on Sunday evenings were in English, on Mondays they were in Italian, and in other languages on other days of the week. Newscasts were carried nightly in French, German and English. On Friday, April the 7th, about 3 weeks after the first tests began, a reporter in the Manchester Evening News wrote, quote, "Every night now I'm getting fine signals from Luxembourg, Radio Luxembourg Experimental, as it's announced in French. Almost every language of importance in Europe seems to figure in these announcements. I've heard German, English, French, Dutch, Italian and Luxembourgish, a local dialect of Flemish. For the past two Sundays, I've heard excellent gramophone record concerts announced in English for practically the whole evening. The wavelength is definitely 1191 metres, just above Kalundborg, which is in Denmark, on 1153 metres, 260 kHz, only 8 kHz higher than Luxembourg." He went on, "I sincerely hope the station gets this or some equally good wavelength officially. It promises to be a station of high entertainment value," unquote. On Sunday, April the 9th, it was reported that the station operated from 7 to 11 p.m. with one short breakdown and one record played on the wrong side. There were 14 stations that could be heard on long wave in the UK in 1933. There was Leningrad, Russia, on 857 metres, 350 kHz. Oslo, Norway, with 60 kilowatts on 1083 metres, 277 kHz. Moscow, Russia, on 1115 metres, 269 kHz. Kalundborg, as we've just mentioned, in Denmark, with 7.5 kilowatts on 1154 metres, 260 kHz. Then Luxembourg, with 200 kilowatts on 1191 metres, 252 kHz. Motala, Sweden, with 30 kilowatts on 1348 metres, 222 kHz. Warsaw, Poland, with 120 kilowatts on 1411 metres, 212 kHz. Paris, the Eiffel Tower station, with 13 kilowatts on 1446 metres, 207 kHz. Another station in Moscow, Russia, on 1481 metres, 202 kHz. Then the BBC National Programme from Daventry with 25 kilowatts on 1554 metres, 193 kHz. The Berlin Deutschland sender with 60 kilowatts was on 1635 metres, 183 kHz. In Paris, France, there was Radio Paris with 75 kilowatts on 1725 metres, 174 kHz. Lahti, Finland was on 1796 metres, 167 kHz, and Wiesen in the Netherlands, which identified as Hilversum, with 8.5 kilowatts on 1875 metres, 160 kHz. In short, just 14 stations on long wave compared to over 30 on medium wave from outside the UK, plus another 6 BBC medium wave transmitters carrying the national programme and the London, Midlands, North, West and Scottish regional programmes. In the summer of 1933, with the growing need for more frequencies for more stations in more countries, another frequency coordination conference was convened in Lucerne, Switzerland, under the authority of the League of Nations. This time, Luxembourg was a participant. The BBC, under John Reith, was staunchly opposed to what they considered Luxembourg's brash commercial style of programming and considered them to be a pirate. They asked the UK government to bring pressure to bear in Lucerne to prevent Luxembourg from being formally allocated a long-wave frequency. Well, whether they did or not isn't recorded, but the upshot was that the conference didn't approve of the use of long-wave frequencies for international broadcasting, preferring only to allocate them to geographically large countries which could not adequately provide national coverage from just one or two medium-wave transmitters. And thus the conference didn't think the size of Luxembourg justified a long-wave allocation, and only assigned them a medium-wave channel of 240 metres, 1249 kHz. The Luxembourg delegates were dismayed and became non-signatories to the Lucerne plan. Radio Luxembourg's popularity and commercial success grew steadily during 1933, primarily because it was broadcasting popular dance band music of a type not heard on the BBC, especially not on Sundays. Broadcast hours expanded to 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. UK time, and the powerful longwave signal was comfortably heard throughout most of Great Britain during the daytime. On Wednesday, the 10th of January 1934, just 4 days before the Lucerne Plan was due to take effect, a column appeared in the Nottingham Evening Post saying, quote, "Although the transmissions from Radio Luxembourg are for the most part electrical recordings and in consequence thin compared with live band concerts, they are extremely popular, the reason being the class of music put over. During each Sunday dinner hour," meaning lunchtime, "there are dance records, and in the afternoon until about 8 o'clock, these electrical recordings of further dance music are radiated, all being sponsored. Then follows a tip-top programme of English music, free from advertising material, and contributed by the station orchestra. The difference in quality, for the better, is very marked. However, it cannot be denied that Luxembourg is a very popular station, and its popularity has been won from the BBC, on Sundays of course, simply by the type of music transmitted. It will be extremely interesting, therefore, to watch what happens in the Grand Duchy." Unquote. And that's where we'll pick up the story next week in Part 2. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks very much, Ray. We continue to get congratulatory messages from all over the world about WRMI's 30th anniversary. That's the station where WaveScan is produced. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to respond to everyone individually as much as I would like to. So let me take this opportunity to thank everyone who sent us messages. We have a small staff of only 6 people who keep all of our transmissions going 24/7, 365 days a year on 13 frequencies altogether. It's their dedication to shortwave radio that has kept the station going now for 30 years. Thanks to everyone who listens all around the world. Last week we told you about the 2024 European DX Council Conference, which will take place in Tartu, Estonia on September 20th to the 23rd. It's open to shortwave listeners, DXers, and international broadcasters. Risto Vahakainu, the Finnish organizer of the meeting, wanted to assure us that Estonia is a safe location, even with its close proximity to Russia. Russia is close, he says, but Estonia has been calm for years. In fact, Russia is more disturbing to Finland because they didn't like our membership in NATO. You can get all the details about the EDXC conference at edxc.org. There you'll find a link to the conference webpage. Robert Kelly in Naples, Florida, sent this question to the National Association of Shortwave Broadcasters. Do you have any information as to what might be a good emergency shortwave longwave radio, which is portable? I'm looking for a couple of options which are rechargeable and have excellent reception and reliability. Well, this is a very good question, Robert, especially since you're in a very hurricane-prone area there in southern Florida. In fact, much of the Naples, Florida area is still recovering from a devastating hurricane that hit the region a few years ago. As for emergency shortwave, longwave radios, I think you're referring to shortwave and medium wave, or AM radios, as longwave isn't used for broadcasting in North America or in just about any part of the world anymore. There are very good shortwave radios on the market, and there are very good so-called emergency radios on the market. But there are not many emergency radios that include shortwave bands, unfortunately. We found one that looks pretty good. It's sold by Eaton, which you can find on the internet at etoncorp.com. That's etoncorp.com. The radio model is the Odyssey, and it costs about $80 U.S. The Odyssey has AM, FM, shortwave, and weather bands, and a lot of other features. It has a solar panel that can power the radio, and if all else fails, it has a crank handle that can be wound to power the receiver if there's no sun or batteries available. It also has a clock, a flashlight, and it can be used to charge a smartphone or a tablet. The Odyssey has a rechargeable battery, or it can operate with three AA alkaline batteries. We haven't tested it ourselves, but Eaton is a very reputable company known for its shortwave radios. The web address again is EtonCorp, E-T-O-N-C-O-R-P, .com. Many emergency radios have only AM and FM, and sometimes a weather band to pick up weather station broadcasts in the U.S., but a few, like the Eaton Odyssey, do have shortwave bands. Another U.S.-based company called C. Crane makes emergency radios that can be powered by solar or wind-up. They have AM, FM, and weather bands, but they don't have shortwave bands. They do, however, make two very small, portable, and excellent quality, we have one ourselves, receivers that cover AM, FM, shortwave, weather, and aviation bands that are not solar-powered or wind-up. They use two AA alkaline batteries, which they say will last about 60 hours. The radio is called the Sea Crane Skywave 2. It sells for about $90 U.S., and there's a version with single sideband that sells for about $200. These receivers get high marks from shortwave listeners. The Sea Crane website is ccrane.com. That's C-C-R-A-N-E.com. And we should mention that both Eaton and Sea Crane radios are also available from Amazon.com. There are some other emergency receivers available on Amazon.com that have shortwave bands made by companies in Asia with brand names like Kato, Voyager, and Texan. The Texan only costs $40, but we've not tested it for quality. So, Robert, I hope this is of some help to you, and we hope this hurricane season will be more kind to the Naples area and everywhere here in Florida. Some major news now about shortwave books. The World Radio TV Handbook, or WRTH, is soon to be available as an e-book. Now, here's why you might want the WRTH 24 e-book. They have up-to-date listings, get the most current information with the 2024 International Summer Schedule, and details on over 30,000 radio stations, including AM, FM, shortwave, and digital broadcasts. Offline access anywhere. Enjoy your radio guide even in areas with limited connectivity. The WRTH ebook ensures you have access anytime, anywhere. Versatile compatibility. Compatible with most ebook readers. For the best reading experience, they recommend Kindle Desktop for Windows and Books for Mac and iOS users. Searchable content. Quickly find specific stations, frequencies, and articles with a robust search function. An interactive table of contents. Navigate through the ebook with ease using the clickable table of contents. Adjustable text size and font. Customize your reading experience by adjusting the text size and choosing from various font options. Bookmark and annotation. Keep track of important sections and add personal notes. And expert reviews. Read insightful reviews and technical evaluations of the latest radio equipment. The launch of the WRTH 2024 ebook was scheduled for Thursday, June 27th, 2024. You can join the Facebook WRTH community to get the latest updates. Visit the WRTH web shop, where you can order the ebook and other WRTH products. Go to WRTH.com and follow the links. And as this is the fifth Sunday of the month, our WaveScan correspondent Prithviraj Purkayastha is with us with his Indian DX report. Prithviraj?
Namaskar from the beautiful northeast Indian state of Assam. This is your friend Prithviraj Purkayastha VU3TQD reporting for the WaveScan. Today I would like to begin this edition of IDXR by congratulating two beautiful organizations known for their wonderful works in the field of radio on their anniversaries which falls on this month. My heartfelt congratulations goes to WRMI Radio Miami International in Florida, USA, who have celebrated their 30th anniversary on 16 June. WRMI Radio Miami International is a commercial international shortwave radio station with studios and transmitters in Okeechobee, Florida, broadcasting to listeners worldwide. WRMI also reaches parts of the world by means of relay facilities and worldwide by internet streaming. The station is founded by our very own Jeff White and currently producing the historic DX program WaveScan in association with Dr. Adrian M. Peterson and Adventist World Radio. Our best wishes and greetings also goes to National Institute of Amateur Radio in Hyderabad, India, which has celebrated its 41st anniversary on 21st June. The institute is a non-government organization founded by Mr. S. Suri, VU2MY, and presently doing in promotion, training, research, development and publication works in the field of amateur radio in India. I would also like to congratulate staff and fellow listeners of Akashvani Guwahati and Shillong Station from my native Northeast Indian region, which are going to celebrate their 77th Foundation Day on 1st July. Both the stations began their journey as a single station under the name Shillong Guwahati Station from the Commissioner's Bungalow located in Ujan Bazar Ghat at Guwahati on 1st July 1948. Both the stations got their individual identity in 1972 when Assam's capital was shifted to Dispur near Guwahati post-creation of the new state of Meghalaya with Shillong as its capital. You can tune in to Akashvani Guwahati on 729 kHz with 100 kW medium wave transmitter and 1035 kHz with a 20 kW medium wave transmitter. Akashvani Shillong with Northeast service can be tuned on 864 kHz transmitting with a 100 kW medium wave transmitter. And here are some of my latest monitoring updates on international broadcasters. BBC World Service was received on 17790 kHz between 12 to 13 hour UTC with SINPO all 5. The station was also heard at the same time on 15295 kHz with SINPO 45343. Radio Taiwan International in English was coming nicely on 9405 kHz between 16 to 17 hour UTC, SINPO 55444. TRT, Voice of Turkey in English, was heard on 11660 kHz between 1630 to 1730 UTC, SINPO 35333. News heard followed by Turkish music and several magazine programs. Voice of Vietnam in English was heard on 7220 kHz between 16 to 1628 UTC, SINPO 44333. Voice of Korea from North Korean Island was heard with their English transmission on 9435 kHz and 11710 kHz between 13 to 14 hour UTC. The reception was, although not satisfactory, but audible enough on both the frequencies. KBS World Radio in English was heard on 9570 kHz at 13-hour UTC with SINPO 34333. Adventist World Radio in Bengali was heard on 15430 kHz between 13 to 1330 UTC, SINPO 45444. Reach Beyond Australia was heard in Hindi between 13 to 1315 UTC on 11900 kHz, SINPO All 5. The station was also heard with English transmission on 15460 kHz at 1245 UTC with reception SINPO 55454. And friends, with this I would like to conclude this edition of Indian DX Report on WebScan. I hope the information will be beneficial to you. If you have any comment and suggestion on this DX capsule or want to send me a reception report, then please write to me at indiandxreport@gmail.com. That is indiandxreport@gmail.com. So until next time, stay safe with your loved ones. Goodbye and 73 from Assam.
Thanks for listening to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week, Radio Luxembourg, The Early History, Part 2. We'll hear about a club for DXers of the medium wave band and our Japan DX report. WaveScan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.